Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Sitting across from me is...
The Democratic Perspective himself. Right here on this stage, Mike Cosentino is here in deep thought, looking at Gary LeMaster, the master of disaster.
Good morning. That's a good description.
We don't want to say anything about sports, do we? I'm not a sports guy, but something happened in Cleveland last night.
I don't know what that was.
It was a BFD. But so in some ways, we've been waiting 30 years for Bernie Sanders. We're going to talk about Bernie Sanders this morning.
Well, we want to talk about, I think we talked about the impact of Trump on the Republican Party and the impact and the basis, what allowed the rise of Trump in the Republican Party. What had the Republicans done? And we basically said they set the stage for this demagogue by a systematic disregard of basic facts like climate change and evolution and everything else. And they set the stage for him, and then he walked in and took over.
Yeah.
Now, what happened on what we want to talk about today, Mike, is...
Yeah.
Dear co-host, is Bernie Sanders, but also what Bernie Sanders' campaign meant, right?
Yeah.
And also what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
Okay, Mike.
Okay. All right. We got it. We're ready. It meant a lot, as you know. I mean, they called it a revolution, and it really was. I mean, this is the only candidate in my lifetime. I'm over 50. I'm over 60. And this is the only candidate that has ever expressed my views, short of Kennedy when I was 11 years old, you know. And I didn't know FDR. Really, FDR and I did not have lunch together, nor did Harry Truman.
I don't think there was a lot of overlap with you.
Yeah, exactly. But the point is this. This was the guy, you know,
Okay, Mike, why was he the guy? Tell folks why.
Well, I just wanted...
You and Gary were intense Bernie supporters. And why was he the guy? Explain to blokes. Why is he the guy rather than somebody else?
Yeah, I don't want to waste your time. He was the guy because he was a progressive Democrat. He called himself a socialist. You know, he called himself what the United States really is. And that is, you know, we want Social Security. We don't want old people living in eating dog food. We want Medicare. We think that children and people should have at least some basic health care. We want these socialist programs. There's nothing more socialist than the American military. And I don't know how many people make their living directly or indirectly from the American military and the Defense Department.
My uncle used to run against socialism, but he spent his entire life in the military where he bought food that didn't have labels on it. Got everything at a discount.
We're talking about finally had somebody that was actually going to do something about education. What do you need? Well, you know what I need? I need my kids to go to college for free. I needed them to go to college for free. My kids didn't finish college. My kids didn't go to Stanford. My kids didn't go to Yale or Harvard. That's the only three colleges that matter, you know.
What other programs did you like that Sanders, Gary? Why did you support Bernie Sanders? He was a long shot. He did much better than anybody thought. It turned out that particularly young people liked him. They liked that personality, that gruff, rough, kind of cranky uncle personality. They took that as honesty, the rumpled clothes, the disheveled hair. They thought, hey, we like this guy.
Well, I think that the reason for that is beyond policies. I agreed with all of his policies, but I think one of the things that made him most attractive is because of the socialist label, in that he wasn't, considered part of an insider in the Democratic Party or any party. He was an outsider. This is the election of outsiders. It's why Trump is where he's at. And, you know, Bernie was always an independent socialist and decided to run as a Democrat. And so policies aside, I think he was attractive because he wasn't beholden to party politics, and he wasn't part of the 40-year-plus policies of both parties supporting corporate entities. And
he's been very consistent in his whole career. You can
really
look back
has.
On his whole career. You can agree with him or disagree with him, but the man has been totally consistent in terms of policies ever since he's been in the Senate and before that.
When he was the only congressman from Vermont, he was the only one back in the population. When he was went to the Senate in 2006 and has been there ever since. Consistent. And we could do like three shows on the differences between Hillary and Bernie, which we don't, to me, that would be incredibly boring.
I think we need to be careful not to put down, Hillary. I mean, on Facebook, I saw a quote that, was from, someone.
Yeah, well, don't say it.
David King.
Is that
since Bernie didn't win the nomination, I'm going to vote for Trump. Also, since the store didn't have my favorite beer, I'm going to drink bleach. I think we have to be careful that
mentality.
We need to make sure that Trump does not get elected.
Well, we were saying before the show as far as I'm concerned, Bernie was the man. Bernie was the candidate I've been waiting for. Bernie was what some of us thought Barack Obama was 8 years ago. If Bernie was running, I don't care who he was running against now in the primary, he would win hands down if we were coming off a George Bush administration and not a Barack Obama administration. He would win no problem. This was the guy. But we didn't believe. I think we've been so beaten down by the Karl Roves, so beaten down by the Koch brothers, we didn't believe that a progressive, a guy that actually believed in the way it used to be, a free or almost free education. I mean, we're talking a decent rate of pay for all workers, for no matter what level. We for whatever reason, I don't know.
He had a proposal, for example, on the minimum wage, I think, to raise it to $15 an hour by 2020.
And what's wrong with that? $7.25 is not...
The direction that he would lead it, he's not really a democratic socialist as the professors analyze. He's a social democrat, like the social democrats who run Scandinavian countries.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not really a socialist. He's not doing any of the seizing the means of production or anything like that. He wants large-scale social program, sort of like in Scandinavia, where you've got free consistent medical care and
I mean, what doesn't it sound terrible? That doesn't sound horrible. And so you had people like young people, so 20s and 30s in Phoenix, making calls to the Carolinas, making calls to Nevada.
Right.
When you know,
let's
for
look
those
at the stats for just a second. He and this is a little bit old stats, but he had 2 million donors. 2 million donors to his campaign.
I was one of them.
He had 400,000 volunteers.
Yeah.
And he got, I think, 12 million votes. It may be higher now.
Yeah.
Maybe 13, 14 million votes. So it wasn't nothing, right?
He, you know. Well, that's it. And the people, once again, the young people who don't understand the system, nor care to, they believe that just for further evidence that both systems, you know, the Demokins and the Republicrats, I mean, there's no difference. I got this speech.
There's a huge difference.
I understand.
There's a huge difference.
To them, we treated Bernie the same. We did not treat him like a viable candidate. We favored the establishment candidate. All the cards, all the shenanigans. People saw the 10, 20, 15,000 people turning out for Bernie rallies, and they saw the 40 people that turned out for Hillary rallies.
No, but Mike, the fact is Hillary won almost all the things that weren't caucuses.
I'm just telling you what they see.
She got a lot more votes than he did. She has a lot of genuine support everywhere. I mean, I was in New York during the thing. People like her there. They supported her. And you've got all kinds of lefties and stuff there, and they supported Hillary anyway.
because they were beaten down just as much as I was by the right, not thinking that Bernie had a chance. And on the other hand, if they looked at the right wing media, they're saying, oh, by the way, real estate's going down 50% if Bernie gets elected. The stock market's going down 60% if Bernie gets
elected. I understand all that. I mean, and they had to, they sicked the tax foundation on Bernie's taxation plans. Tax Foundation is a right-wing, a sort of extreme foundation. It sounds good. They monitor taxes and stuff, but it was founded basically by the owners and managers of General Motors in 1937. It's the oldest think tank in the country, and it receives large donation from the Koch brothers. So when Bernie put out his plans, the people who got all the attention and criticism was the Tax Foundation. People don't know what it is. They take it seriously. The problem is the entire establishment. I mean, if you look at the Washington Post, battered him over and over again. It's not just they all came out. His proposals really frightened the establishment, and I think that's what his supporters liked.
The thing is that he offered up a payment plan for. You know, he was accused of giving things away for free, and that was why people supported him. But when you look at his website and you look at his proposals one by one, you see that he had real ways of paying for each and everything. And I think it might be useful at this point to list some of the key things that he stood for. And you know, if you go to the various issues, I'll just list a few of them. Income and wealth inequality was one of his primary issues.
I think that's central to the campaign, Gary. I think that's an issue that's not going to go away. And my general take on that, and that you brought it up, is that is the central issue, his economic issues. They're not going away, whether it's Hillary or Trump. The growing disparity between the very rich and everybody else is going to be a problem. The influence of money, another major Bernie thing was the influence of money in politics. That is not going away. That is a major problem for American democracy.
He was Elizabeth Warren before Elizabeth Warren existed. The thing that I think you could characterize his entire campaign was equality. You know, he was for a living wage, you know, $15 minimum wage, fair and humane immigration policy, racial justice, fighting for LGBT equality, empowering tribal nations, caring for veterans, Medicare for all, so health care for everyone, and to strengthen and expand Social Security. So he looked at all of the minorities and the weakest groups in the country, and you know, based his proposals around their needs. No other candidate has done that in my lifetime.
All right, so Bernie wins, I think, 23 primaries and caucuses. That's a lot. They're smaller states, and they tend to be caucus states where the most committed people only turn out. Same thing happens in the Republican Party. It's not a Democrat or Republican thing about caucuses. So what next? Bernie came up short. What can his supporters do?
Hillary takes Bernie as her vice president candidate, and they win in a landslide.
Okay. That's one scenario. I know that there are several groups who tend to be sort of very progressive, shall we say, or who would like Bernie to turn over his all his information, because Bernie has a vast list of 2 million donors, and they want to continue the fight on with or without Bernie, and I think pretty much outside the Democratic Party. Is that the way to do it?
I don't know. I think what is going to be the key is the convention and the platform. I think that you're going to see you've already seen a change in leadership within the party as a result of Bernie's campaign. At least that's the rumor. And I read the other day that Wasserman Schultz was stepping down.
Yeah, she's out.
So, I think that's a start.
But what about the fact that, guys, that the platforms, if you go back and read the platforms of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party over the years, they bear almost no relationship to what the parties do once they get in power, or let's say can do. I mean, you can have a thing like, we want absolute social justice for everyone. Put that in my platform. Getting there, right? Getting there is a big, big, big problem.
Well, it's a good thing nobody's read it or looked at it or has media reported a platform in a long, long time. They're almost, the only thing people pay attention to are the media sound bites.
Well, what they're looking for is, it's usually negative stuff. In other words, the party regulars fear that something will be in the platform that will cost them votes and can be used against the party.
It doesn't seem to bother the Republicans because they have some lunatic things in their platforms.
I know. But that, and the Democrats, that's why they're very cautious. And that tends to produce a very, idealistic, but vague on the details, platform. What if Bernie dominates the platform? And, but how do you get from having a good platform to having a Democratic Party that recognized that millions of voters voted for a guy who calls himself a Democratic Socialist? We can argue whether he actually is or not, but how do you think the Democratic Party is going to they've had a major insurrection. It did not happen like Trump did. He lost, but he went a long way. So what's the response of the Democratic Party to someone like Bernie and all his supporters?
Well, you've already seen during the campaign Hillary adopt a lot of the policies that Bernie was promoting. The process moved her quite a bit to the left of where she started. And so I think that's one outcome. I think depending on how the convention goes, it could maintain that or take it even further, to the left. The fact is Trump is so far out there with his policies. I was reading an article this morning. I don't want to make this about Trump, but this was almost universal, stance by economists looking at the platform or the policies that Trump has put forward. If you look at putting up the wall across the border with Mexico, it could cost us $1 billion a day in trade with Mexico and 6 million U.S. jobs. If you look at what the cost of deporting the immigrants, it would be an estimate of $381.5 billion to $623.2 billion to the U.S. economy. If you look at banning Muslims, that's estimated at $24 billion a year in students and business and tourism, et cetera.
But I understand. You're talking reasonableness in a unreasonable world. What all that matters to Trump, and I stole this from Chris Hayes, is that he dominates the news cycle. It worked for him in the primaries. He thinks it's going to work for him in the general. All he needs to do is dominate every news cycle. Doesn't matter with what. And his people look. Boy, when you talked about the wall, they went nuts. Talk more about the wall. So as long as he dominates every news cycle. But what is sort of happening is that journalists are actually asking questions. Like Gary just said. But even that doesn't matter. He still dominates the news cycle. So he thinks he's going to be wrong.
He's 70% unfavorable at this point.
They're actually looking at his
98%. I don't know. His mother and his wives are the only.
daughter that he wants to have sex with.
I didn't catch that. Jesus.
I didn't catch that either. All right. But yeah. the point is that's Trump, and he's all over the place, and he's winging. He's sort of an unscrupulous demagogue. And so he's pissing off the far right wing of the Republican Party because he's not following the party line because Trump says whatever he wants to say as Mike says, dominate the news cycle. Because he thinks it's going to be popular. Yeah. Build a wall. That's popular. Oh, yeah. we'll make will make Mexico pay for it. It's preposterous.
Well, and he's also a subscriber to the thing we all know. No matter how they, you know, it doesn't matter if they spell your name right, as long as they're talking about you.
Right. And he spreads rumors and lies and conspiracy theories. And anything that he thinks will get him some press and get him some notice and feed.
Right.
Far-right bloc.
Right, right.
You know,
right,
I mean, are part of American policy. I mean, the truth is that Trump also got an awful lot of votes with that stuff. A lot of people support it.
He's exceedingly popular in Arizona, which tells you more about Arizona than I care to know.
Well, sure. But, for $10,000, you could have had your picture taken with him yesterday.
But, you know, is you can't, in his position, you can't roll back the things that you've said. You know, he's made all of these claims and promises, and if he rolls them back from here going forward, he's going to have an insurrection.
Well, that's what they hope. We're talking about Trump again, but they hope that he would become, when he got the presumptive nomination, that he would have become more of a candidate, of a real candidate.
Well, and they wanted to embrace and control him. I mean, if you look at Obama's original appointments to Secretary of the Defense, you see the Washington establishment embracing Obama and pushing him to conventional choices. In fact, he appointed a Republican to the position that satisfied the defense interests and the policy people.
I don't know if that was a motivation. I think he fully embraced the government of rivals. He was a great admirer of Lincoln, and so he you know, there were, I think, seven cabinet members or cabinet level people that he nominated that were Republicans. That's the first time ever.
Clinton did the same thing.
No, he didn't. Not to the degree.
But he appointed Republicans in key positions.
No, I think I'll stick with
my. And as far as I'm concerned, Clinton was the last
interpretation of
Republican
that
administration we had.
Okay, so the establishment tries to embrace Trump. And Trump just is all over the place, and he thinks he knows better than anybody else. He's the absolutely most narcissistic candidate in human history. Now, what are Democrats going to do? Suppose Hillary wins a close election with Trump. Suppose she wins a landslide against him. What can progressive, liberals, hardcore, whatever you want to call them, Democrats do? What are the issues that they should go to?
Well, the country will take a deep sigh of relief, first of all. I mean, because the insane policies would make us a third-rate power in a really short time in one administration. But you want to know what progressives can do with a Hillary administration, with a Clinton administration.
What should Sanders do, too? I mean, what should he do with this huge number, most folks don't understand this, but when a candidate runs, he accumulates this tremendous amount of data and information. The list of 2 million donors who support progressive guy like Bernie is a big deal, right? It's power and influence because people liked what he was saying.
Yeah.
And he has those lists and stuff. So what should he do? What should his supporters do at this point? Should they integrate into the Democratic Party? Or as some of the more radical people think, form a sort of third party with take Bernie's information and form a third party against the Democrats?
Well, everybody knows that a third party is suicide. I mean, and the way it's structured today in the United States, there is no room, there is no fairness. There is no method by which a third party could do anything except damage the very ideals that you favor.
I think the way to look at it is that the so-called Tea Party movement that began in 2010, they have, I believe, 41 members of their so-called Freedom Caucus in Congress. And they have since 2010 have dominated the conversation and policies in Congress with 41 people.
Good point.
By contrast, the Progressive Caucus and the Democratic Party is like twice that size. And they're largely ignored. That's one of the problems that came out.
But isn't that because the Democrats in the House of Representatives, U.S. House of Representatives, are a far minority. In fact,
even when they were a majority, they were ignored.
Progressives or moderates or centralists or even conservative Democrats, they're outvoted all the time by Republicans. Republicans dominate the thing. And because Republicans, that's a very different issue, I think, Gary,
because let me finish. The caucus was a large portion of the Democratic caucus. Even when Democrats held both the Senate and the House, they were still ignored. When Bill Clinton won in 92, it was because the party believed that it was the move to the middle. He was a centrist candidate. So from that point on, the progressives were basically kind of pushed aside. Now you ask what's going to happen going forward. I think the best way to look at that is to look at what Robert Rice, the former Secretary of Labor under Clinton, is talking about. He has been a large supporter of Bernie's,
yeah.
and he's, you know, very visible in the media, and especially social media, and he's calling for a movement within the Democratic Party that we need to change the party and move it more to our direction. I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, I think that's good, but I do think that comparing the leverage that the Freedom Caucus has, given Republican rule that they have to have a majority of votes that are Republican to pass anything, is very different leverage than progressive has ever had in the Democratic Party. One, because progressives are much, much less willing to damage the country and damage the party than the Freedom Caucus. Well, their Freedom Caucus is willing to do almost anything. Crash the American economy, throw us, our credit is the lifeblood of our foreign policy and everything else. The fact that people trust American government, they undercut that because they're willing to do almost anything. You'll find that progressives, pissed off as they are not going to do anything to hurt the American people. They just won't do it. They won't do that kind of thing in order to get legislation in. And I think unfortunately, the more conservative Democrats know that.
Yeah, well, you know, the progressives are just better Americans and more loyal Americans and more patriotic Americans. But
they don't call themselves patriots and freedom,
right. Exactly.
Freedom fighters.
Because we're Americans. We don't, you know, I know that draping the flag is a great thing, but I assume, because I'm an American, I assume I'm a patriot, right? By the way, I don't have, as an American, I don't think I have to prove I'm a patriot. And I think that's what a lot of progressives think. I don't have to prove I'm a patriot. I'm an American. Just look at what I do and say, and you'll get the idea. You know, what did Ben Franklin say? The reliance on oaths is the thing. So that not necessarily the people who are waving the most flags are the most patriotic. The people who are most patriotic care deeply about what happens to America and the American people and adopt policies from that based not on anger or frustration, but based on a deeper looking at what's good for the country.
I totally agree. I think the so-called Freedom Caucus, the Patriots, have co-opted patriotism and the flag. As I often say, they walk around with a Constitution in one hand and a Bible in another, and they've read neither. And that comes out in virtually every debate or every conversation I have with those people.
I agree completely. We should do another program on what the Constitution actually does and says. Because they're carrying around little pocket constitutions and waving them at you and quoting.
It'd be nice if they read them sometime.
Yeah, and, you know, anyway, So you think, Gary, your general take, I don't know about Mike, your general take is something you agree with Robert Reich, that the progressives should form a movement within the Democratic Party that will influence its politics, that that's what Bernie supporters, let's take Bernie out of the picture for now, that's what Bernie supporters, who obviously weren't scared off by, look, they spent billions of dollars attacking socialism, and young people just ignored all that stuff. You know, so is that what you think should do?
I definitely think that's what they should do, and I think we can't underestimate Hillary. It's like Hillary is not the enemy, you know, of Democrats and
there's some of that in the Sanders campaign. Hillary is the enemy,
but that's people in the campaign. I don't believe that's Bernie, and I think. You know, it gets heated during the primary season, but I think we can't, you know, I mean, we can't have Trump as president. You know,
Hillary's campaign positions are really quite good.
She is
establishment
really...
or not. Her positions about the banks and about a lot of other things are sometimes even to the left of Bernie's, and they're certainly and not horrible. She doesn't have a horrible platform. She hasn't been running on a centralist, right wing Democratic platform.
And they portrayed her as a liar and as a poll watcher. And you know, I've got an article here I pulled off that was written by a Republican conservative who is supporting Hillary. And points out that you know her image of being a liar is absolutely false, that she has, you know, proven to be the most genuine, most honest politician in the primary season from either party. She actually, you know, when you do the fact checks, she is seldom caught in a lie. And, you know, for example, Trump is 90% of what he says is a lie. But I think the key thing that this article points out is that she's popular when she's in office. She's the most qualified presidential candidate maybe in history. And she's well liked by the public when she's in office. It's whenever she has run for office that she has...
She's not a good candidate.
Well, it's because of the media attacks. You know, the media is wholly owned by the Republican Party. And so...
The liberal media?
And so it's...
But she's so careful about every single thing she says. I noticed that she's been attacked for 30 years or whatever,
if you had 40 years of the media attacking you and examining everything you've said and done, and you've had millions and millions of dollars spent investigating you. I mean, now you're looking at far more than $100 million that has been spent over the years investigating her.
And yeah, those are just Republican sort of McCarthyite moves, though. So what do you think, Mike? I mean, how would you do it? Do you have or you think it's a battle of ideas? The ideas is the thing is to get the ideas out.
You guys keep talking about truth as if it matters. what country do you live in?
It should, but you're right.
But it doesn't. It doesn't matter one little bit. It's all about image and money and how which way the sound bites are going on a particular given day. And it gets you really frustrated because truth does not matter. Hillary's qualifications does not matter. Her vetting, the fact that she's the most vetted public figure ever in the history of the world, doesn't matter. What matters is that Democrats don't vote. It's just the same old thing. I've been sitting at this microphone for 5 years. It's the same
four
thing
years,
now.
But yeah,
it's the same thing now as it was 5 years ago. and it's the same thing when I got politically active. Like most people, getting the vote out. Democrats don't vote. Latinos don't vote. They don't freaking vote. Then they make it hard for them to vote.
You folks probably don't read I think it's the Washington Post, New York Times, but the Washington Post had an article about the possibility of Arizona going blue. And the National Democrats always think that there's a possibility of Arizona going blue and going at least purple, and that Trump might lose in Arizona. And I think most Democrats who live in Arizona think if this is really wishful thinking.
It'd be no problem. It would. Sheila Healey sat right here. We're talking about executive director of the Arizona Democratic Party, sat in that chair, says if they register 213,000 Democrats between when she was here in January and November, first of all, Ann Kirkpatrick wins, and so do the down-ticket Democrats.
Yeah. I think there's about 200,000 Latino potential voters who are not registered, even though they're U.S. citizens, even though they can legally, they don't participate in the political system.
So there's so many layers to this, and we're talking about an onion. I was at a Democratic soiree in Phoenix. They have 67 campaign workers, and paid campaign workers in Arizona. Now they're going to have 200, the Democrats. They're getting crap loads of money compared to what Arizona usually gets to elect.
Arizona Democrats usually get elected.
But part of Hillary's campaign is they don't call it that, is returning to the 50-state strategy. In other words, part of her campaign is now giving money to help support states like Arizona Democrats, Idaho Democrats, that the party was so bitter at Howard Dean for doing, because they said, we lost close congressional races because Howard Dean gave money to all the parties and tried to build the party. Now, hopefully, she's adopted some of those ideas, and
it's been a disaster since they went away from the 50 state strategy.
Yeah, the other letters you're going to hear in the next few months are the DFA, the Democracy, the old Howard Dean. In fact, I heard a lot of it when I was down at this LD meeting, one of the Phoenix legislative district meeting a while back, and chatting with some of those people since then. We're hearing more about the 50-state strategy.
I'd like to address a really controversial topic, if I may.
Controversy. Gary.
The superdelegates.
You can go ahead and use the bathroom.
There is so much misinformation out there about superdelegates.
Hit us.
This is an undemocratic process when we give people extra power. And so I'd like to just, point out who superdelegates are, because I don't think
none of us,
but I think people need to understand that these are superdelegates consist of party leaders and elected officials that are part of the Democratic Party. So every House and Senate, sitting member of the House and Senate who's a Democrat is a superdelegate, so-called superdelegate. Every Democratic governor is a superdelegate. These are people that have spent years and years and years working for the party and going above and beyond. I don't think it's really an undemocratic or a horrible thing to give these people an automatic seat at the convention.
But aren't they part of the establishment? And Bernie was very much against them. And Elizabeth Warren has come out against superdelegates. I understand that they're mostly people who have contributed not money, but a lot of time and effort to the Democratic. They're Democratic Party officials. They're people who've worked hard. So the debate is whether to cut out their status and force them to run if they want to go to the convention or not, right?
Right. And I understand both sides of the issue, but it's been made out to be this villainous group of people that is not accountable to the vote of the Democratic members in each of the states. And that's not true. I think the only thing that they should be held accountable for saying in advance who they're voting for. I don't think they should be able to come out at the beginning of the primary season and say, I'm for Hillary or Bernie or whoever.
Well, that's exactly what they did.
That's what they did, and that's where the problem lies, in my view.
Yeah, I understand.
They tried to influence the election before the primaries really took place, and
they should be forced to not commit.
But aren't they basically the establishment of the Democrats. They have a lot to lose. You're a governor. You want to win your next election. You're a Democratic governor.
You have a bigger
Koch
state.
Brothers are coming for you with a lot of big money. You're going to be very careful about who you support.
Well, and I think you have to look at, you know, the establishment has become a dirty word. But I don't think that's necessarily true. There are really fine people who are in office. You know, we tend to paint, you know, all Congress members with a broad brush, and all people.
Well, that's another thing
who
the
are,
right has been very successful at.
Right,
government is bad.
But there are I've known at least a half a dozen. You know, people who are members of Congress or in the Senate who are really fine, upstanding people and caring people, that I don't think anybody would have a problem with if they knew them.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. You sent around to us Linda Valdez's piece in the Arizona Republic. And it delineated a lot of things, and it had quotes particularly from like Fred Duval and stuff. And the thing that she raised is the increasing partisanship. At one time, I think she's a little wrong, and Napolitano barely got in, you know, as a Democrat. But now things are so partisan, and there's a 200,000 member, Republican voter registration advantage over Democrats. Understand that I think are they now the independents now the largest group,
yes.
Gary, or the
yes.
second largest group?
Yes, they're the largest.
So understand that independents have a tremendous amount of influence, but independents don't vote as regularly as people who belong to a political party.
And, you know, I think there's, independent is often a misnomer because a lot of people who are registered as independents have strong leanings, you know, to one side or the other. And so they're going to vote, you know, they're, you know, along with their, you know, party, even if they're not members.
Let
of the
me
party.
Ask you sort of like a mainstream media question here. And the question is, Bernie Sanders, vice president or not?
Things we can believe in, things we can respect. I don't care at what level of government he is. He is the candidate that people like because compared to the others, he represents who we think government should be. We can believe in him. We respect him. He has genuine ideas with genuine concern for his constituency. Vice president, hell yes.
I think it would be great. I think there's also some, you know, if he chooses not to do that or if Hillary chooses not to invite him or ask him, I think there are some other fine candidates out there. Cory Booker would be great. Elizabeth Warren would be great. You know, so there are a lot of people that would carry that same mentality and banner forward as part of a Clinton administration.
So if you were part of the Hillary campaign, would you kind of do something to move to the left or at least address left issues?
I think I would embrace the Bernie supporters.
So one of our sponsors, Democrats of the Red Rocks, I don't know, do you have the information, Gary?
Democrats
of the Red Rocks usually stops their breakfast in June, but they're going to be having breakfast on the third Thursday of the month all through summer, and it's a bunch of interesting programs.
The one for July is on July 21st. It's Thomas Robles. He'll be talking about a living wage. There are meetings of Democrats.
That sounds very controversial, Gary.
There are meetings at the office the third Sunday of every month in the evening, just to you know, kind of hobnob with other Democrats. The office is at 2855 West State Route 89A.
Yeah, whether you're Democrat or Republican, please, you want to get involved. Please get involved in politics, guys. Democracy depends on it. We have our sponsors, Democrats at Red Rocks. We have our sponsors of Democrats at Verde Valley have taken a hiatus. But please look for a candidate forum in August, sponsored by Democrats of the Red Rocks. Please listen to our podcast. Please go to our wonderful, very pretty website. It's a beautiful website, Democrats Democratic Perspective. We have our podcast there.
VVID.org.
VVID.org. VVID.
We have over 400 posts now.
Verde Valley Independent Democrats.
And we do read all your letters and emails and stuff, even if your politics is the exact opposite.
We have gotten some interesting ones lately, and I've gotten some interesting. So please, folks, go to VVID.org and listen to Democratic Perspective. Thank you.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.